Dublin to Denver podcast with me, Colm Cronin, and I am joined today by Stuart Roach. Stuart, how are you doing?
I'm very well, Colm. I'm very well. Thank you to Seth Michael for the all the shout outs I got last week on the podcast. I am not Jokic's father, unfortunately. I have two sons of my own, neither of whom are the best players in the NBA at the moment.
Anyway. Not yet.
But I was at a basketball tournament, my son's basketball tournament, which he won, thankfully. So he's on his own journey to basketball stardom. Really enjoyed listening to the podcast last week. We're really, as we were chatting before, and we really are this is the no man's land of the NFL, Colm. This is one of those occasions where we're going to be digging deep. We're going to be going off on tangents. We're going to be doing our best because there hasn't been much. Although these are the kind of the times, Colm, that you almost miss Talib on the roster. Yes. You know, and not only for the fact that he's one of the best quarterbacks I think I've ever seen play for the Broncos, but just because he would certainly keep you honest, keep you on your toes, I imagine, as a GM or a head coach. But it's all been quiet. But maybe quiet is good for us at this stage.
I think quiet is, because I have said that to Michael last week. There have been far too much chatter from the Broncos and far too many promises and commitments and we're going to do this and we're going to do that statements over the past few years. So I think quiet is good. And the other thing I suppose we were talking about, Stuart, because it is, to me, right, in over here, listeners mightn't be as familiar because I don't know if it is in the States, but certainly I know here in Ireland, in the UK and in Europe, August is referred to as silly season in the media landscape because the vast majority of politicians and others are on holiday. There wasn't football on, soccer for listeners in the States, in anywhere in Europe at that time. And so it kind of, the papers needed, you know, to fill their column inches and intended to be kind of silly stories. And that is what we're seeing a little bit, obviously, at this time of year and going back to last year, because there have been some statistics, I think, that have come out over the past week or so, Stuart, that we were kind of discussing. And I went back and I was telling you, like, the headlines from last year around the AFC West. Bill Barnwell from ESPN asking, was AFC West the best NFL quarterback division ever? That was in June of last year, which gives you a good idea of silly season. Colin Cowherd asking again in the summer months, again, the same question, is the AFC West the best quarterback division ever? Others going further than that, is the AFC West the NFL's best ever division? Clearly, somebody who just started watching the game. But there were quite a few questions like that. And as it transpired, you would have to say, we know, look, the Broncos were horrifically bad last year and even more so on offense. But the Raiders were equally as terrible. And the news this week that Josh McDaniels and the Raiders continue to make baffling decisions and now have to hope that Jimmy Garoppolo is fit, I suppose. But also, by Justin Herbert's lofty standards, he had a pretty mediocre last season as well. And all the teams were towards the bottom in terms of first downs by passing in the second half of games last year, which is where you really want your quarterback to come alive. So suffice to say, no was the answer to all of those questions as to whether it was the best quarterback division, the best division. Absolutely, stunningly not. But there was another piece that you stumbled across that was quite interesting.
PFF, you know, look, people have different opinions about PFF, Pro Football Focus column. I mean, I you know, I can kind of take or leave, I suppose. But they have merit. I mean, there's professional people. There's people who become scouts. You see, Salami did an interesting article about the rankings they released. They ranked all 32 starters ahead of the 2023 NFL season. You know, so there are good people working on this, and there are people who have moved on to become head coach or assistant coach, stuff like that. So there is merit to the PFF, and their rankings are not just, you know, plucked out of thin air. I mean, I think it comes as no surprise, obviously, for me, the top three, I would totally agree with. Pat Mahomes is number one, Josh Allen was number two, and Joe Burrow was number three. I think with that column, you know, you get sort of the feeling that any of those guys can beat the other guy on their day, depending on, you know, whichever way the ball bounces, if the other team's defense, you know, there's nothing between those. Justin Herbert came in at number four, which I think might be a wee bit high, but I guess they're probably looking up, you know, beyond last year and the body of work he put up to that point, and he still is a dangerous quarterback. Interestingly, the first NFC quarterback was Jalen Hurts at seven. You had Lamar Jackson at six, and you had Aaron Rodgers at five. But just from a Broncos point of view, Colin, which I found interesting, and I kind of find it, you know, very difficult to argue, apart from maybe the guys immediately ahead of him. Coming in at number 18 was Justin Fields. Number 19 was Ryan Tannehill. And then number 20 was Russell Wilson. I guess Fields, to me, I think has still got it all to prove. We know what he's like from college. I do think the Bears have given him a better chance now because they have gotten more dynamic players around him. I think they've improved the offense. They've made good moves. Ryan Tannehill, to me, looked like he was very much in a downward spiral. But I suppose if you were to look at the rankings that they had Tannehill, he would have been higher for 2022, you'd imagine, because he'd come off a good season. They looked like a decent team. But I just think, you know, to me, it's indicative of just how badly Russell Wilson performed last year, albeit with a lame duck head coach, that he is 20th. And some would argue that he could probably be even lower. You know, Mac Jones, I don't think is anyone's idea of a franchise QB. But, you know, Kenny Pickett is somebody who's, I think, is going to be better now next year. Brock Purdy is kind of intriguing. So these were all guys that were kind of just on Russell Wilson's heels. So, you know, I think it, to me, it's just yet another example of how much work Russell Wilson has to do and how much work Sean Payton has to do to get Wilson back, you know, some kind of, like, to me, Colm, I think if I thought of Russell Wilson as the Seahawks QB, I know his last season there, he did begin to tail off somewhat, but I would have had him comfortably sort of top 12 QB in the NFL. And now number 20 seems just about right to me. And I think when you consider what we gave up for that, you know, it just reinforces what a disastrous trade it's been up to this point. There is still an opportunity for him to get it turned around. And I do think that the appointment of Sean Payton has given him every chance. But as we sit here right now, to me, it's just, you know, as I said, another example of just how poor a trade that was, which we all were happy with at the time, let's be honest, and we have held our hands up. There's no point in sort of saying, oh, I didn't like that trade. We all liked the trade. None of us could have foreseen just how badly Russell Wilson was last year. But, you know, further evidence that I think he needs to really get things turned around and quickly too.
Yeah, I mean, what all this strikes me is a little bit on, and there are a number of factors to this, because when I look at Russell Wilson, I agree, happy on the trade, the contract was something that always came with the asterisks, but the trade, yeah, and my feeling was that the change of scenery and Pete Carroll, you know, were issues, but boy, Pete proved me wrong last year. But one of the things that can impact, and I suppose this is where we'll have to see, is around the offensive coordinator as such. And I know that kind of Cecil had talked in his piece around Matt Stafford, and he's questioning Matt Stafford. But I mean, Stafford is a guy who ultimately is just a year removed from winning a Super Bowl. And I think you have to factor that in. And that some of the passes that he made in that Super Bowl itself were very impressive. But one of the things that was interesting with Matthew Stafford, and I think this factors in a little bit on the Herbert and with Russell Wilson as well, is around the offensive coordinator. And if you look at Matthew Stafford's kind of career and you look at his yards per attempt, the offensive coordinator can have a huge impact on things like that. And that's where I suppose I think it's a huge year for Herbert, the AFC West, because under Lombardi last year, they just didn't play an offense that allowed him to throw deep. But it is also a huge year, obviously, for Russ. And he should, there won't be the excuse of Nathaniel Hackett and everything that follows that. And there won't be the Pete Carroll old man excuse either. So this is Russ very much on the hot seat. Now, the talk has been, again, the talk from outside, that Russ hasn't really said much, which again, I'm happy about. But the talk has been that Russ looks leaner this year, which I think is good, because I think that's important in terms of his mobility. But the piece with Sean Payton that we're seeing over the last couple of months, and the bits and pieces of the media that he has done, has been infinitely more impressive than anything we have seen from a head coaching point of view in recent times. And perhaps that has kind of, look, there's no doubt that Sean Payton is a very accomplished head coach. He has a very impressive record. But equally, we now have to see how he does in Denver. And there's sometimes, I think, a tendency, and perhaps it's due to the lack of success, because that can happen. And not just in Denver, but at any franchise where there isn't success, indeed in any team where there is a success, go across sports. But there's this rush to anoint people. And we saw it with George Payton, and we have seen it with quarterbacks. I mean, go back to the outstanding one is the Mahomes and Keenum kind of training camp summer. And people talking about Keenum not throwing interceptions and Mahomes throwing interceptions. Remind me again how that one has worked out for Patrick Mahomes, for Case Keenum, and for the Broncos and the Chiefs. So this time of year, I think just for me, it's taking everything with a pinch of salt and not buying too much. It's to be entertained, but not buying too much into the hype or the hyperbole that exists.
Yeah, I think you're right, Colin. You know, I guess we're all we're all Manchester United fans. And I do remember, because being from Dublin and Ireland, obviously, most of us grew up, half your mates probably be Liverpool fans. And I do remember when Fergie was in charge of United, Liverpool went through quite a fallow period, apart from the odd cup win. And I remember Liverpool, who kind of remind me of the Broncos now at this stage, any new signing that flashed, was immediately going to be brilliant. There was this rush to an, we signed this now, this is it, he's going to win us the league. And I do think you're right about the Broncos, and I think it's been the lack of success that anything then that approaches even competence at this stage, it feels like it has to be overpraised. I think you've been at pains to point out that Sean Payton has given no fodder in press conferences. He's not made any proclamations, he's not made any promises, he's not made any kind of predictions, and I think that's the right way to go. Because I do think, as we were talking beforehand earlier on, and I think interestingly enough now, certainly when I started to support the Broncos, Colin, They were really the only show in town when it came to sports. The other teams didn't seem to. I know that the Rockies seemed to be okay, but there wasn't a huge tradition of success amongst the Nuggets. It's interesting now in that the Nuggets have hit something of a probably their golden period, and we've been kind of jumping on the bat. Well, I have, I suppose. I've been dragging you with me. But I think the Nuggets are now into their first ever NBA Finals. They annihilated the Lakers, and they should be well rested before the arrival of the Heat now, I think, on Friday morning. And I think that's going to add extra pressure to the Broncos. In some ways, the Broncos have had it easy, but they've had it their own way. But then, recently the ice hockey team won the NHL. And I would be surprised if the Nuggets didn't win the NBA championship now over the next weeks. I think it'll be tough, but I do think they'll win it. And I guess with ownership like we have with somebody like Sean Payton, that surely would accelerate the desire to get this thing turned around. And I think, if anything, that almost sort of subliminally puts the Broncos under even more pressure to just be a well-run organization again, and to just have a team that at least can get out of its own way. I think that's, for me, has always been the hope for this season. I don't expect us to get into the playoffs. I think there's an outside chance we might make it as a wild card, and I think that would be a success for me. But I'm looking for a team that looks like it's run by adults, and I think we probably should be able to get that. But I do think that in a peculiar kind of a way, the success of the Nuggets, it's not as simple as it inspires other organizations in the city to then it's not like the Broncos are waiting for the Nuggets to win the NBA championships before they get their house in order. That's something that should happen anyway. So I think that'll be interesting to see if they do go on to win it, which I hope they will, and I expect them to, just to see what kind of pressure, if any, that kind of puts on the Broncos as an organization.
Yeah, I mean, I think when there is success in the city and fans can look at that and point to that, and when Broncos haven't put a good product out there, shall we say, and when we are all living through, a cost of living crisis and the prices of tickets are only going up, people are going to look at things. That you can be bad, but it's when you're boring that is the real issue. And so, yeah, it will be interesting to see. Stuart, I kind of alluded to it earlier, but, the Raiders and the Jimmy Garoppolo situation has led to lots of speculation. And again, it's silly season, so one wonders whether to put anything in it. But the conversations regarding the fact that Thomas Brady may not be done in the NFL, and that we may see him back once again in Mile High. How does that make you feel?
Well, I think that the Raiders were one of the teams that he was strongly linked with when he left the Patriots, yes, column, if memory serves me. I do remember, like, he's a boyhood Niners fan. But I don't think that never seemed to be a strong runner. I don't know. I guess, they seem to have gone another direction. And, I think they drafted Lance at that stage? I can't remember. I think they had, hadn't they, when Brady came on the market? So maybe they just felt that they were all in, or had they...
There was the infamous, if you remember, you're going to go with that MF-er.
Was that Jimmy then? Was Jimmy?
The understanding has always been, now there are some people who kind of contend that it was others, but
I thought it might have been Carr.
There's some who felt it was Carr, but the consensus, I think, was that it was Garoppolo. Which is why this adds potentially additional spice once again to what's going on. And obviously, you've got the Josh McDaniels connection. But I hasten to add, Tom Brady is retired. Tom Brady handed in his retirement card.
But nothing surprises you with Brady. I mean, I wasn't surprised to hear that he was trying to part own a team. You know, it seems like it seemed like the logical next step for him to make. I didn't know that the Raiders were on the market for that, to be honest. So that was a surprise. But no, it wouldn't hugely surprise me. Because I think, you know, you just have to wonder, like, did something happen between himself and Garoppolo there? If this is like Jimmy finally gets another big move, and then suddenly Brady looms in the rearview mirror like something out of a horror movie, like Jason or Freddy Krueger from a horror movie. So yeah, I don't know, Colin. I mean, he began to look his age, I felt, in the last season. I think he probably should have stayed retired the first time around. I know it didn't end the way he wanted it to, but, you know, there was a great, to be fair to Brady, Colin, he did superbly well to win the Super Bowl for the Bucs, and he went out gunslinging in what should have been his last game for the Bucs against the soon-to-be champion Rams. That was a fantastic game, and that to me felt like, you know what, if I have to go out, that's about as good a performance as I'm capable of giving, and that seemed like a noble death to me, Colin. So I was a little surprised and a little disappointed that he came back. And it's not like he's going to get any better. And it's not like the Raiders are loaded in the way the Bucs were. In fairness, the Bucs had serious talent. They were just missing one piece, which was Brady. The Raiders have bits and bobs, but they're not anywhere close to the same level that the Bucs had. So I think that would be a really bad move. So I would be surprised if he did come back, but I would not be shocked.
Yeah, I mean, again, I wouldn't be shocked because he is so competitive, and I think it would be difficult to walk away. But from what I understand, he did a lot of due diligence when he initially kind of left the Patriots. And the reason he ultimately chose the Bucs was because he felt that they had a very good team in place. They had a number of draft picks that they were able to go out and get really good players that could immediately contribute. Tristan Wirfs, remember, they brought him in, and the guy played at an all-pro level in year one. And Anton Winfield Jr., another guy who came in at safety. But also the Bucs and their willingness when Brady was there. And it's funny how, you know, a superstar QB can change, and an owner's willingness to open the purse strings. Hello, Glazer family. Hello, Bengals owners, famously tight, who got a superstar QB, but they were willing to bring it in. So, and to me, I would say even further than that, and I agree, though, that last game, you know, well, ultimately wasn't, but the game against the Rams, but like you saw it begin to go before that. I keep going back to it. There was a game against the Saints, and he went to throw the ball, and it didn't go where he wanted. And I actually, you could see him look at his hand, and it was like his brain couldn't compute that for the first time, the ball hadn't gone. It wasn't that he got rushed. It wasn't that somebody got a hand on it. But it was the first time the ball had not done exactly what he had wanted it to do. It would obviously, there could be another story if it were to happen. And I imagine, the Raiders are generally a team that lights the headlights. So you never know what it could be, but I imagine if you're Andy Reid, you know, sitting in Kansas, this has to be, you know, manna from heaven, because you're just going about your business. Your own superstar QB gets asked about, you know, money, and is he concerned about not being the highest paid player, and he goes, no, I just want to win rings, which is the exact answer you want him to give. And that is who we are in a division with. If you were listening last week, you would have heard Michael say that he expects the Broncos to go 7-10. He is...
I'm the most optimistic.
You're the most... Which is generally, I would say, on the podcast, the way it goes. But I am generally the... the more pessimistic of the three of us. But Michael has taken that crown. He says 7 and 10.
I was 9 and 8, I think. Yeah, I was 9 and 8.
Were you 9 and 8 or were you 10 and 7?
No, I was not 10 and 7. Come on, now that was the crazy Drew Locke years, which I've learned through, you know, awful experience not to be drinking the Kool-Aid until it's been diluted properly. I mean, there wasn't a huge amount of conviction in my 9 and 8 prediction column. It could just as easily be what Michael predicted. Yeah, I mean, I guess my thing would be, I think somebody like Peyton should hopefully mean that we win some of those close games, because we were involved in a huge amount of close games last year. We just seemed to lose all of them. So my thinking, I guess, is that I think he's good to sneak a few more of those than we would have done last year. But I mean, who knows? I mean, you know, like, unfortunately, Colm, you know, we've been talking about talking things up and talking head coaches up and stuff like that. But, you know, I think we've had a decent offseason. I like the guys on the offensive line. I think we're slightly stronger than we were before we went into the offseason. But we haven't done anything transformative, to be honest. We haven't. You know, you're hoping for players like Bowles to come back from injury, Tim Patrick to come back from injury. You're hoping for a player like Randy Gregory to actually live up to his contract. And you're looking for one or two of the rookies to come in. But that's asking a lot, because the rookies were drafted in the third round. So, you know, I as I said, and I keep saying it, I'm looking for competence from the Broncos this season. I just don't want us to just be the Keystone Cops like we were a lot of the time last year. I do think we're going to get it, but I wouldn't be massively optimistic. I mean, I wouldn't be going out putting, you know, significant money on us making it as a wild card team by any stretch. I'm hopeful that we might, but no, I wouldn't be, you know. See, I'm putting I'm on the spot now, because I'm the most positive, and I kind of feel a bit foolish for my
art. Well, my hope is, Stuart, that come January, you know, you will feel foolish, but only because, you know, you were actually too low on the Broncos.
Conservative in my, yes.
Yeah, that is the hope.
I'm not going to lie to you, Colm. I'm not expecting that to happen. I'm just going to say that
nor I, given my prediction of them. But next week we will maybe we'll end up delving into Broncos history, because obviously we'll be another week removed from OTs and whatnot. But we will also know, I suppose, a little more on where the Nuggets are in their quest for their first NBA championship. And to any of our listeners who are Nuggets fans, wish you all the very best of luck. You can find Stuart on Twitter at PurpleHeartTC. Michael is on there at Michael_NFL, and I'm on there at Colm from Cork. If there is a particular topic you would like to hear us talk about, if you have questions, I suppose Broncos fans of the generation of Stuart and myself who want us to delve into the past, we are happy to do that. Reach out to us either on Twitter or reach out to the fine folks at Mile High Report, and they will pass it on to us. For now, though, all that remains for me to say is go Broncos.
And every time I've done this, they've won. So I'm going to say go Broncos, go Nuggets.